I meant this one.
Okay, we good?
All right, yeah, we good.
God damn it. Never get that perfect intro, but that's okay.
We never will. We'll keep trying to search for one for however many episodes it takes, but we'll never find one.
Yeah, that's how that works typically. Hi, everyone. Hope everyone had a nice weekend. I did.
You did?
I did.
Come on. That's the most boring intro ever.
I don't know, man. I don't think it's that bad. No, what'd you do this weekend?
I don't know, man. I don't think it's that bad. It's not that bad. What I did. I was being distracted by all the fucking action that kept happening over the entire weekend. I thought this NHL trade deadline was usually how, over the last like 10 years that I've been watching hockey, all the action usually happens on the Monday or whatever the trade deadline day is. Like 90% of the action. In this case, it was like scattered out like a week before, and then there was a few days of silence. And then all of a sudden, Friday came, and then Saturday came, and then all the fucking blockbusters in the world happened. And then Sunday, there was more. And then Monday, there was even more.
Yeah, there was a lot. It was a lot.
I don't know. I haven't taken a look at how many trades actually happened this trade deadline. But I want to say it has to be like one of the most active that I've ever seen in my life.
Well, like on deadline day, I don't think it was that many. I think it was mostly just minor stuff. But you're right. I texted you. I think it was either Friday night or Saturday night. It's like things are happening. It seemed like things really picked up very quickly. Things escalated very quickly. Yeah. Like it was nuts. But yeah, I'm gonna quickly pull up the record of trades that happened the last couple of days. So if you wanna kinda just run it a little bit all.
I was the biggest thing that I noticed from this trade deadline was it was very, very, very obvious as to who the buyers were and who the sellers were this time. Usually some teams are kind of on both ends of the spectrum. In this case, Vancouver was kind of that. They were kind of buying and selling. Weirdly enough, the Senators were as well. Like, I did not really understand that, but we'll talk about it. But the teams that bought this trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like
some of them did. Yeah. Yeah. There weren't many actually, but yeah.
Florida all the way fucking in. And I was surprised Tampa also seems again all the way fucking in. They overpaid. They definitely overpaid. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But they're fully going for a three-peat as well. Florida is as well, which absolutely sucks for Toronto fans because this is the best that we could do.
Yeah.
And now we have to face one of them in the first two rounds. So.
I hate the NHL playoff format. I hate it so much. But you can also throw the Rangers in there. The Rangers made a lot of moves yesterday. They're going for it hard. Like, yeah, man, all the Atlantic teams were going at it pretty hard. The Atlantic division basically became an arms race, which is kind of bad, but whatever.
Pretty much.
Even
Boston, dude. Boston, to an extent as well, pushed all the way in.
Yeah, I don't blame them, but I really like Hampus Lindholm a lot. I'm sure we'll get into that shortly as well. But It was busy. It wasn't necessarily like it was probably more spread out than what we've seen in the past, but here we are. And
do you have the record for the number of trades up in front of you?
I do. I have all of them. Sorry, I have like the ones that went down yesterday. I don't have the actual number, but I have them here. Like the list.
Why don't we do this? Let's go over the most important ones because there's way too many to go over individually.
Let's go over the most important ones.
I've listed just on my notes the ones that I want to talk about in this episode. So what we're doing right now is we're doing a doubleheader, Simon and I. So we're doing a home and home, if you will.
Yeah, school's been tough, kids. It's been tough. Yeah.
But because of the sheer number of trades that have been going on, there are a few big ones. There are a few really big ones that happened that completely changed the dynamic of some teams. So we want to spend this ride, as well as the next ride, which we'll be recording in just a couple hours, just to go through the biggest trades from this trade deadline. And so we'll break it down in terms of like, well, we've kind of done this before. I've named the last episode Trade Deadline Review Part 1. This will be Part 2, and then we'll end it with the Part 3. We'll talk about which team won, which team lost. And I think it makes most sense in that case to start off with the most obvious. We'll start off with the Leafs trades, okay? We'll start off with the most obvious.
That makes sense. That makes large sense. Scale, for Leafs pod. We're good.
Large scale important trade of the last 48 hours. Alex Biega traded from the Leafs to the Predators for future considerations. Like, man, I want you to give me a full-fledged breakdown on this. Go.
I was really sad that they traded him because he's from Harvard, and I was really hoping to have like a 3-on-3 Harvard unit of Alex Biega, Colin Blackwell, and Alex Kerfoot, but that can never happen anymore, but it's okay. Yeah.
Alex Biega. Yeah,
I don't know.
For those of you listening, I'll miss you, Alex. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is definitely not the biggest Leafs move over the last 2-3 days. But, I mean, this man, he's played 243 career NHL games with Vancouver, Detroit, Toronto.
And that's about it, yeah.
Hey, wait, we get future considerations. I remember I saw that post on social media where Nashville was like...
Nashville Predator one,
They're like, we'll miss you, future considerations. And I'm like, aw. Anyway, that trade aside, I'll miss you, Alex. I guess we'll talk about the fucking Mark Giordano trade now, right? Like, just that little trade.
Yeah, talk about that bum, Yeah, so March 20th, 2022, 3:11 p.m. This one was weird. We'll get to that in a second. The Leafs acquired Mark Giordano, Colin Blackwell from the Kraken in exchange for 2 seconds and a third. So that's 2022-2023 second-round picks and a 2024 third-rounder.
Yep. So, what was your initial reaction when Mark Giordano was traded?
Great. What did we give up for him?
Okay, because mine was concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
I was like, look, he's great, but I feel like he's way overhyped right now this season. The man is 38, and I know he's only a couple years removed from his Norris winning season. Mm-hmm. When did he win the Norris? 2019, 2018?
3 years ago. 3 years ago, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I know he's good, but he's very, very old. And I don't know if he has, well, he probably has some things that still make him a good defenseman, but is he still going to be the same Mark Giordano? Yeah. I don't know. So I just hope we don't overpay for him, but it became like just stupidly clear that he would be coming to Toronto, especially since over the last few days, he was like, I prefer to go to Toronto. So
Like, he's from here. He had a no trade clause. So again, if he wanted to come to Toronto, he was gonna dictate that. So like, I think the biggest concern, I think initially, was like, how much are they gonna give up for him, right? Because like, you have no idea. And then you see like what Hampus Lindholm got, or sorry, what the Bruins gave up for Hampus Lindholm, who was also a pending UFA, again, completely different player, but like, we'd seen the market of defensemen go up significantly just with some of the pending UFAs. So and it took a while for the return to come out, and again, part of the reason is basically more cap shenanigans in terms of like why it came out, why the trade was actually came out so late, thanks to Brandon Pridham, MVP of the team. But like, the Leafs did really well. Like, they did so, like, with that one move, they basically addressed two of their biggest concerns I think they had in terms of their top four defense, as well as their getting defensive and offensive contribution for the fourth line. Colin Blackwell will do that and then some. So we'll see if he's on the fourth line. We'll see if he's with JT and Willie. I don't know what they're going to do yet. I think Sheldon, if one thing we know about Sheldon Keefe, he really likes to tinker. But I was concerned at first as well. And part of the reason is because it took so freaking long for the thing to come out, the return. But and just to clarify that, if you go to the Cap Friendly's Twitter page, they have a bit more of a detailed explanation on this. But basically, the reason it took so long is because I think per the CBA rules, every day the like cap space is calculated at 5 p.m. So between 5 p.m. between 5 p.m., like between days, you are allowed to be over the cap by a certain amount, I guess. So the Leafs announced it at 5 o'clock or whatever, when they could actually be that percentage over the cap, and then they were able to actually make it official and everything. So a lot of people were curious as to why that took forever, and there was your answer. So yeah, pretty straightforward.
Did you mention that Mark Giordano is half retained?
I did not. So that's even better. Yeah. So he's half retained. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just to run you through his season. By the way, do you think you can mute your mic whenever you're not talking?
Yeah. Is that my fan?
Something like that.
Yeah. No, that's my fan. It's my vent. Sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. This season, he has 23 points in 55 games this season for Seattle. He actually sat out the last two games for Seattle, basically solidifying the fact that he was going to get traded. He's played career 1,004 games across Calgary and Seattle, and I think he's had like 532 points. So very, very good defenseman. He won the Norris again, like I mentioned, just a few seasons ago now. So he'll be a solid addition to the Toronto Maple Leafs defense core. They need a steady veteran presence. They have TJ Brody and Morgan Riley, but none of their defensemen bring what Mark Giordano bring. He wants to win a cup, and he viewed the Toronto Maple Leafs as possibly one of his last destinations to win the cup. So in his 16th NHL season, he chose the Leafs at the trade deadline.
Yeah, so we'll see what comes out of that. Again, I've seen a lot of people suggest that maybe he does what Jason Spezza did and basically take like veterans minimum for like next 3 years, which would be super nice if he did. Because again, if you actually look at his advanced stats, like he's not an elite offensive point getter like he was earlier in his career, but his defense is what it is. So, I mean, it's exactly what they need. They don't need any puck moving defense. And we've talked about this in other episodes, but yeah, I mean, for what they got, it's great, especially if they can bring him in like for a longer period as well.
Yeah, he signed a $6.7 million deal with the Flames in 2016. That will be expiring at the end of the season. So for anyone wondering, this is a rental acquisition. We don't know what he's going to do at the end of the season. He may take another small-term deal. Some people were rumoring that to be the case. After this playoff season is over, in the offseason, he might sign a short-term small-cap deal with the Leafs, just like Simmons or Spezza or even Thornton did over the last few seasons, but we'll see what happens. As of right now, he will slide in very nicely and comfortably into the Leafs. His cap hit will be, for the Leafs, just $3.375 million.
Which is a very, very solid number.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Colin Blackwell. I actually don't know too much about him. Do you?
I don't know much. I've heard his name last little bit because, again, I think when Seattle was in Toronto, he actually scored a shorthanded goal. But like again, if you look at his player card on like if you go to Jay Fresh Hockey or whatever his Twitter page, I think he did a card recently, and like he's basically like just a very solid like even strength defensive monster. I've seen a lot of people comparing him to Zach Hyman in terms of very gritty, will go in the corners and stuff like that, which is obviously really nice to have. But I think it's basically just a cheap fourth line forward that can potentially move up and down the lineup if you need him to. But I don't see him really going past the fourth line, maybe on the third, but we'll see. Again, like I said, Sheldon Keefe likes to tinker, so maybe he puts him beside Willie and JT to see if they can get him going, but I don't know. I'm not really expecting that, though, because that's a hell of a lot to ask.
Yeah, he seems like a very energy type of addition to the forward depth. I remember hearing, I don't know if it was from Mitch Marner or someone else, I'm trying to pull up a quote here. He's always up in the rush, even on the penalty kill. He's able to get up and down the ice and play as hard as he does, has always been impressive. So that's good. We'll see what happens. This was only made possible though because the Leafs also put Peter Mrazek on waivers in the hopes that he would be claimed by someone. If that happened, that would have been a dream come true for some Leafs fans and the Leafs, to be honest. I feel so bad saying that. Sorry, Peter.
Like, I don't think it was in hope of him getting claimed. I think it was just like
they need to bury like, some of his money.
Exactly. And then if he got claimed, okay. Leafs aren't on the hook for any of his money. Now they can move him up and down the lineup, move him up and down between the AHL. So Like, I wish he got claimed. I mean, a little bit, but like, the thing is, thinking about it right now, like, if no, because it's the thing is, like, I was thinking about this earlier, it was pretty clear yesterday based on just this, like, the quotes that came out that the Leafs were never really in on Marc-Andre Fleury, which is fine because again, the cost was really expensive. So like, if Mrazek got hurt, and I know he's been really bad, like, you're basically relying on Shulgren, and then if not Shulgren, Michael Hutchison. So it's a very slippery slope. I think it's Jack Campbell once he comes back from injury, but like, until then, like, the Leafs are basically battling right now to get that third Atlantic spot, because as of right now, I think the Bruins are tied with them, with the Leafs having a game in hand on them. But anyways, I kind of wish he got claimed, but it might be a blessing in disguise that he didn't, because now they have more security in that.
But then again, if he did get claimed, then maybe the Leafs would have made another acquisition at the trade deadline. I don't know. Hard to say what happens. A lot of Leafs fans, including myself, were just a little tinge of disappointment that the Leafs didn't do anything more than just Giordano for the trade deadline.
There were a lot of people who were quite upset. very angry.
Yes, because you see the two teams ahead of us in the standings in our division, Florida and Tampa. And you look at the additions they made, which we'll get into, versus what we did. And it's just like, I get it. We retained our first pick this year. First overall pick this year. It was our first round pick this year. We literally kept all of our prospects. But like, should we have given some of them up? I don't know. Like, if you're a team trying to go for the cup, your prospects should be at the bottom of your priority list.
I get that take. I think especially just looking at what happened with the Blue Jays, for example, like back when they had like Bautista and Encarnacion, would basically sacrifice the farm to get like Tulo and David Price. Like, that was such a hard fall from grace, because basically what happens is you're emptying your closet to basically be like suck for like 3 years. So while I obviously understand that, like, the Leafs were able to get, where the Leafs were able to fill basically every position they really needed to. Goaltending an asterisk, don't get me wrong, Jack. But the thing is, Jack Campbell was hurt for a while, which probably explains why he was not quite as good like the last little bit. So like, you take that into account, and like, I wouldn't necessarily be against them moving prospect, but only if it was someone who was actually worth it. And like I said before, the only guy who was actually open to doing that for would be Jacob Chychrun, and he didn't get traded. So like, I just look at the players that were moved, and I don't see anyone that's really, that would have been worth giving up any like actual like legitimate prospects or assets for.
Another Leafs goaltending asterisk that happened over the weekend was the Leafs, they signed 32-year-old Harry Sateri. Harry Sateri.
Yeah.
But they needed him to clear waivers before he could join the team. Unfortunately, the Arizona Coyotes signed him while he was doing that, so that was pretty much a waste of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you could see Kyle Dubas tried to address every single position. Like, he
exactly
got a depth forward. He got a solid top four defenseman who can, I'm going to reiterate this, perfectly replace what Jake Muzzin brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to address the goaltending by putting Mrazek on waivers and trying to sign Harry Sateri. Sorry, I really don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah. Like, I think the other thing is, in terms of like just the prospects, like, I think it just goes to show how high they are on these players. Like Matthew Nyes or Nyes, I still don't know how to pronounce his name.
Nice.
Like, yeah, Nyes. Okay. Like, apparently he's going to join the Leafs at the end of the season. So like, he's a 6'3 forward. Who has a ridiculous shot. So the people think he's going to come over to either the AHL or NHL at the end of the season. And if he's as good, and you put him beside Willie and just John Chavarez, again, just as an example, because who knows what happens, bro, like that, like that's all you need. And like, again, I just think the front office being mindful for the fact that like trying to be competitive without sacrificing their future, or sacrificing their future to get something like, so to get a player with control, which again, there wasn't many that were moved, if any, like at the deadline. So like, I just think people were like this with the Jake Muzzin deal as well, where they acquired Jake Muzzin and they didn't really do anything at the significant at the deadline. Like the Giordano move was their deadline move. Like if they did that, the deadline, I feel like people would be way more excited. I think it's just the timing of it just kind of upset people, which I don't really get because again, you're still getting a player. But anyways, I don't know. I think there's a lot, like the Leafs are by no means like they came out of the deadline very, very good in my opinion. So yeah.
Yeah, I think if you evaluate the entirety of the Leafs moves during this trade deadline, the one biggest takeaway you can get from this is they addressed every position without sacrificing much at all. Like I would say all of the trades they made were wins. It's hard to look at them any other way.
Yeah. The thing is, people are talking about this is like this is Kyle Dubas's last run, like this is his last year or whatever.
No.
I honestly don't think it is. Again, if there's anything this season has proven, it's proven that the Leafs are actually like a legitimate team. Again, if they can get like a goalie in the offseason, like I don't know who that would be. I don't know what they would give up. I don't know if it'd be a signing or a trade or whatever. But like they are one or two pieces away from being like scary. And like you said, the fact that if they are able to hold on to the three seed, if they end up playing Tampa Bay or Florida in the first round, they're going to be the underdog. So like, anyways, I don't know. I don't think this is Kyle Dubas' last year. I really hope it's not because I think he's done a really good job, like especially the last 2 years. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's going to be his last run. Like, you look at how nice of a guy he is in general and also his focus on whatever he's done for the Maple Leafs. Yeah, I get it. His negotiations with Marner and Nylander were highly, highly questionable. But I mean, if that's his only negative, no GM is perfect, first of all. If that's his only negative, I'm willing to overlook that because of all the good drafts he's made, all the other player re-signings he's done, all the talent that he's scouted from Russia or Europe, all the trades that he's done, all the free agents that he's picked up over the last few seasons. Like, look at what he's done over the last summer. This guy is good. So stick with him. I want to get to the Dermott trade as well. Travis Dermott traded to the Vancouver Canucks for a third round pick. I will miss you, Travis. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, again, I don't think we really need to get too deep into it here. Travis Dermott spent a lot of time with the Marlies. Was a really kind of nice defenseman, like development story where he's like a third round pick or second round pick. I can't remember what it was. Developed with the Marlies, came up, scored in his first NHL game. Like he's from Newmarket. Loved playing for the Leafs, his favorite team. Great. Was never a super great player. Unfortunately, cost the Leafs game 6 against Montreal with his little spin move in the neutral zone, which again, that's unfortunately, whether you like it or not, that's probably was but a good portion of what he's going to be remembered for. But I really like Travis. I hope he finds his game in Vancouver because I think he actually has a lot to give. Nice young defenseman, can skate with the puck. I think the change of scenery will help him a lot, just like a lot of people are saying. But again, it was just time. Especially with them acquiring Giordano, he was going to be like their eighth defenseman. Yeah. And like we've seen Kyle Dubas do before with other players. If you want to play and they don't have a spot for you in the lineup, like he'll move you. Mm-hmm. And he did. So good for him. And they got a third round pick back, which is pretty damn good return for someone who's like fringe lineup defenseman.
For Toronto. I would say our defenseman in relation to the rest of the league, I would say our defense is like middle of the pack. So him being traded to Vancouver, whose defense core is worse than ours on paper, I think he'll have a way better opportunity to play there than he did over here.
Yeah, I know for sure. Because the problem with the Leafs is they have a lot of like mediocre defensemen. So they don't have like a super deep good defense core. They should have a super deep mediocre defense core. Because like Liljegren's developing, Sandin's developing, Justin Hall, and like you have Nelly Giordano's there. Basically everyone gets shoved one spot down the depth chart and just he was already so far down as is. So anyways, you could probably move on, but yeah, Travis, I'm sure a lot of Leafs fans and Leafs Nation will miss you. We wish you nothing but the best in Vancouver and go kill it because I actually love Travis Dermott.
I do too. I want to see him succeed. He is making $1.5 million on the cap this year for this season and the next season. So they actually signed him in the offseason.
His term.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Vancouver gets him for term as well. He's 25. Yes. Like I remembered when he scored his first, I believe it was his first career NHL goal or first playoff goal. And this was against the Boston Bruins in 2017 playoffs.
That was game seven. Yeah. Game seven. I remember that. Yeah.
And I remember when that went in, I'm just like, fuck yeah, Travis Dermott, future of the Leafs, let's go.
I was at the Jays game that day. Yeah, I didn't get to watch the game. I was watching it from the box. And I was like, oh, shit.
You saved yourself.
Yeah, kind
of. But like, yeah, I always looked at him fondly. Whenever I hear Leafs on ice play, when I'm watching a game, his voice is usually really loud. Like, I can always hear him yelling like, wheel, wheel, wheel. Yeah. Or trying to communicate.
He's fiery.
Yeah, very fiery.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyways, we'll miss you, Derms. Yeah.
Yep. Colin Blackwell, quick thing that I wanted to mention that I didn't get a chance to. This season, Mr. Colin Blackwell, he has 17 points in 38 games. Career, 119 games, 49 points. Fuck, I wish I could read the number of hits that he had. I don't think that's provided on NHL.com. Either way.
Give me a second. Yeah, go ahead.
While you pull it up, I want to quickly run through the Leafs pairings lines now. Here's what they're going to look like ideally. This is after all the players come back from injury, because right now, Muzzin's on injured reserve. Andre Kasha is also going to miss a few games. That's what it looks like, because he exited that Nashville game with another, it looks like a concussion, which is scary considering he's had a few. And then Sandin is actually on LTIR now and he's expected to miss weeks, which throws the Leafs defense pairings into like flux right now until the playoffs. Because you're likely not going to have Muzzin until just before the playoffs, I want to say. You're not going to have Sandin probably until the playoffs now. That's only 1 month away at this point. So ideal world, once they all come back, you got Bunting, Matthews, Marner, 10 out of 10. You got your Calder candidate. You got your Rocket Richard winner. And then you got your...
one of the best lines in the league. We can just leave it at that. There you go. Russell,
yeah. Kerfoot, Tavares, Nylander. Good. Mikheyev, Kampf, Kasha. And then Simmons, Spezza, Blackwell. I'm going to put Blackwell in there. Don't know where he's going to slide in, but let's just assume he does on the fourth line. First pairing, it looks like they're going to stick with Riley Bouche. That's my prediction right now. And that's because I think they're going to stick Brody back with Giordano. He's had a lot of experience playing with him, obviously, in Calgary. He was his right-pairing defenseman when he won the Norris. So I think Giordano would love it if he could play with Brody again. But I see this as a second pairing for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Gio and Brody. Ah, fuck, man. That's so sick, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's deep. It is quite deep. Yeah, and then you probably have like Liljegren and Hall as your third pairing until you get Muzzin back and
I think Sandin
back, and then
yeah, in the playoffs they're probably gonna do Muzzin and Sandin.
I agree with that. Or Muzzin, I could also see them try. Like I hate that they probably might do this, but like I could totally see them doing Muzzin and Hall as well as a third pair and just sheltering the hell out of them. Like, because the reality is, like, I don't think either. I think Muzz can play the right side, but he plays the left side of the hall. Sandin, again, I don't really think Sandin's. Anyways, I don't really know. That's like, it's my point here is that, like, I think just on paper, I could totally see Sheldon Keefe saying, we're just gonna run Hall and Muzzin until it doesn't work anymore. And then if it doesn't, they just move on from Hall. Because granted, he's earned it. He's played really well as of late. I have not minded Hall's game at all recently. So that's why I don't really necessarily mind that if he can get back to that with Muzzin when he comes back. But I don't know, man. We'll see what comes, what the result is. But I'm not exactly I'm curious to see what happens with the third defense pair come to playoffs.
If your third line is Muzzin, Hall, that's a win. That is exceptional. Yeah. Like,
oh yeah,
never in the last decade have we had this deep of a forward group and this deep of a defense group for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I know earlier on I was saying, like, oh, I'm a little disappointed. I wish they did a little more in the trade deadline. Honestly, man, this trade deadline is way better than last year's. They got Nick Foligno for way more.
Okay, yes. Okay, but the thing is, on paper, Nick Foligno would have been great if he didn't get hurt.
If he didn't get hurt, yeah.
So, like, again, this Mark Giordino trade could suck if he gets hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm knocking on wood because I really hope he doesn't. But, like, that's a thing, right? Like, I don't, yeah. Like, because, like, last year was basically Kyle Dubas was trying to do the same thing where basically he tried to address every area of concern. They got a goalie. They got Nick Foligno. They got some depth defensemen. And ultimately what ended up really kind of doing them is, like, well, number one, John Tavares got hurt. Number two, Nick Foligno, like, destroyed his back.
Sorry, what's up?
I was saying, like, if you compare, like, last offseason to this season, basically the same thing in terms of Kyle Dubas trying to address areas of need. But what it really came down to was Tavares got hurt, like, severely hurt, couldn't play. Mm-hmm. And Nick Foligno destroyed his back.
And Muzzin,
that was it.
Got injured too.
And Muzzin got hurt. That's three just Dermot devastating injuries.
Once in a lifetime. Yeah,
Dermot and Galchenyuk, two players who are known for their questionable decision-making, cost them two games. And then in game seven, they just folded because not mentally tough enough, I guess. I don't know. I don't really have an answer for you there. But point is, like, sure, they should have won, sure. But, like, in terms of the, just purely Leafs trade deadline alone, they did a lot they could have done. Anyways.
It seems like to me they addressed everything that went wrong in that Montreal series. Galchenyuk's out the door. Dermot's out.
Mm-hmm.
Muzzin finally has... They have some insurance if Muzzin gets injured again. They have his replacement like I've been crying about getting over the last year. And then Tavares, you just hope that it doesn't happen again. It was a freak accident, right? There's not much you can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
And someone, I forgot who it was that said this, but they're in the hockey world. They mentioned that if you sign Tavares, Nylander, Matthews, Marner to their Albatross contracts, then you put yourself at risk in case one of them goes down with a significant injury. Because it's hard to replace them.
Yeah. And that's right. That's a thing, right? Like, that's the risk you take. And again, the Leafs have been fortunate that at least during the regular season, again, knock on wood, that nothing as serious has happened to any of them, really. Matthews was a bit injury prone his first couple years after his first year, like shoulder and neck and everything, but he's fine now.
Then wrist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the wrist too. Yeah. But, like, now he seems to be fine. Everyone seems to be fine. Again, knock on wood. I swear to God, if something happens after this pod, I'm going to burn everything to the ground. But, yeah.
Their goalies for the playoffs will likely be Jack Campbell, Soupy. And it looks like I'm going to make a prediction here. Erik Sjögren will be the backup. I doubt Mrazek will be the backup considering his recent stretch of games. But then again, there are still 20-something games left between now and the playoffs beginning. So we'll see if Mrazek goes on a run, if he gets another opportunity. I don't know. Extras for the Leafs, I'm going to make a prediction here. If, in an ideal world, my roster stands, it'll be Hall, Engvall, Liljegren, Clifford, Robertson, Mrazek as extras one way or the other, some combination of them.
Yeah, do rosters expand with playoffs, right? I think they do.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so never mind. I was going to say, like, worst case scenario, I could see them carrying three goalies. And then, like, if you need the space, you can send, like, Liljegren down or something if you're not going to use them. Or Sandin. I think Sandin can be sent down as well. So they have options. I do think they carry three goalies on the roster, though. Just with them for the postseason. But I think as of right now, you're probably right, just with Sjögren and Campbell, depending how Sjögren plays down the stretch. Again, depending how many games he gets, because I think at this point, Mrazek basically gets the Freddie treatment. From last year, where you basically just sit him down and be like, okay, we're gonna get your mental state back. So just sit there, work with Steve Briere, and hopefully we can get you back. And then He can play, but we haven't seen enough yet to feel confident that Peter Mrazek can win his one playoff game.
Can I make a request, Mr. Simon Yon?
Oh no, what's the request?
Can you pull up, well, I'm going to talk about something right now. In the meantime, can you pull up the reported almost trade for Marc-Andre Fleury that the Leafs made and what those swaps would have been hold like?
On. Yeah, okay, 1 second.
In the meantime, I just want to emphasize for anyone listening, I'm fucking thrilled right now because the more I'm reading about these trades and the fact that all these rosters are becoming more and more solidified over the next few weeks, oh man, it's playoff season, baby. Like, this is it. Like, your rosters are what they are at this point. There's no more trades. The next 20 games is just, every game is now going to be playoff style hockey. This is the ramp up now toward what the fuck we've been waiting for the last year. We all remember what happened last April, don't we? Last May. Hopefully, this roster changes our tainted memories, not only of last year, but of the last 14 years of not making out of the goddamn first round. 14 years or 16 years? 2004, right? 18 years?
Yeah, 2004. Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. 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 So the Marc-Andre Fleury trade would have been Fleury and Hagel for Matthew Nyes and Peter Mrazek and then multiple first round picks.
Holy fuck, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, this is actually probably a good opportunity to kind of get into the Brandon Hagel trade that the Chicago Blackhawks got from Tampa. So Tampa got Brandon Hagel. Good for them. They gave up a lot. They gave up what, like multiple first round picks, like two firsts, I think it was.
I have in front of me. Lightning get Brandon Hagel, a fourth rounder in 2022, a fourth rounder in 2024.
Yeah, and two fourths. That's what it was. Yeah.
In exchange for, so the Lightning give Boris Kachuk, Taylor Radish, and two firsts.
Yeah, Kachuk. Yeah.
So the conditions on the first, I'm just going to read the conditions for you. Should the 2023 first round pick be in the top 10, the Lightning will instead transfer their own unprotected first round pick in 2025 to the Blackhawks. In the event that both of Lightning's 2023 and 2024 first-round picks are in the top 10, Tampa Bay will transfer its unprotected first-round picks 2025 and 2026.
Yeah, so that's not happening. So you're getting 2023-2024. So, and if that was a cost to get Brandon Hagel, it would have been even more to get Marc-Andre Fleury. So I don't like that. I don't like the deal for Tampa at all. Really? Sorry. Like, here's the thing. And this is what we talked about. Brandon Hagel's having a really good year. I think he's a good young player. And I think some of the Blackhawks players are talking about how it's too bad they traded him because he's the exact type of player that you would want to get in a rebuild. Fair. But like, the reality is the Blackhawks got two first round picks. And basically two prospects. I think Taylor Radish is a prospect and Boris Kachuk's he's basically a prospect, but kind of getting to the age where you're not really a prospect anymore and just kind of like a fringe NHL player for a guy who apparently is a pretty good player. But from what I've seen, I think a lot of people think he's riding a PDO heater, which for those of you who don't understand what PDO is, basically just luck. He's shooting like 23% or something stupid like that. So that's going to come down. And you're basically trading two first round picks for that. And the reason it's kind of confusing is just they could have easily just they could have allocated those assets elsewhere. I'm not sure what you could have gotten. Like, I think Ricard Raquel would have looked nice in Tampa Bay. I don't know if Claude Giroux wanted to go to Florida, like maybe they could have worked something where they get Claude Giroux. I don't really know, but like, man. I just see two first round picks and two, especially with Taylor. I think Taylor Radish is actually like a pretty solid player or is developing into one. I could be completely wrong about that. I do not know, but it just seems very slightly irresponsible for them to be spending picks like that for a player who's, again, he's only 23. So he's still growing. He's still developing. Fine. But red flag, big red flag.
Yep. I was shocked when I first read this trade and when it got processed. That's a bucket load. That's a fuck ton for Brendan Hagel, dude. Yeah. And I'm going to look at the Lightning roster right now. Mute your mic, by the way.
So just for context, I just pulled up his career stats. So last year he had 24 points in 52 games. Not great. This year he has 37 and 55, which is better.
It's a lot better.
And again, that's on a bad Blackhawk. That's bad on a bad Blackhawks team, but he's also shooting 22%. And he has 21 goals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 21 points, 16 assists for 37 points and 55 games.
Yep. Hold on a second. Let me. Brendan Hagel is yeah, he's a forward. So I'm wondering where he will slot in.
Yep.
You got Killorn, Stamkos, Kucherov, first line, ideally. You got Palat, Point, Sorelli, Paul, Colton, Brendan Hagel. So it looks like he's a third line addition right now. I'm reading this off of Daily Faceoff. So if Brendan Hagel is going to play in your third line, that's a lot. Ooh.
Well, they're not afraid to do that because remember, they also gave up a first round pick for Barclay Goodrow.
And then they won the cup.
Who is not very good. And this guy's younger, and I assume he has more offensive upside. So, and again, I guess one thing we have to remember is one thing we're talking about is like the market was just was awful this year for buyers. It was a lot. So like,
yep,
you pay that price. He's 23 or something like that. He's young. He's very, very young. Yeah, he's 23 years old.
Yep.
Wow, he's a Buffalo Sabres draft. I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah, and the Lightning get him with term. 1.5 yeah, until the end of the 2023-24 season.
And then he's an RFA at that point as well. So, like, it's you're getting control of the player, which is great, but like, how good is he actually going to be? And at that point in time, is he going to be someone you actually want to re-sign? Again, that's yet to be seen. Apparently, the players were really high on it. I think Steven Stamkos is really excited with the fact that they added him, which is great. I mean, I just question, like, there's like the Tampa Bay Lightning are a great team. I think they're probably, even though Florida's in first place, I think they're probably going to be the favorites to repeat for the cup this year until Florida can actually show me that they're actually good in the playoffs. But like, yeah, it, I get the whole going all in, putting all your chips in the middle to be super competitive, like winning now. But like, I just don't see this Brendan Hagel move moving them moving the needle that much to make it worth giving up all those assets. That's kind of where my main point's coming from.
This was definitely, I want to go back on your point you made earlier, a seller's market. Like, what happened here? I'm going to give you an example. Seattle Kraken. Do you know how many goddamn picks they have in the next 2 years? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 picks over the next two seasons.
That's crazy. Well, like, no, well, for context, like they sold off hard.
Yeah.
Like they gave up so much yesterday. Like two picks for Daniel. Like, again, I'd be curious to know what the, I can just take a look. Hold on. But like,
they don't have a roster.
They gave up a lot. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. They got three there. Got two for Marcus Johansson. Like, yep. Oh yeah. So like, again, got three for Kelly Yarncroc. Oh my God. Yes. That's right. I remember seeing that.
Yes.
Yeah. So like, anyways, like main point stands, like they, it was a seller's market. But still, that's a lot. That is a lot.
Yes. Normally anyways, you have 7 picks in one draft. So 14 picks over two drafts. It's 25. They added 11 over the next 2 years.
That's three years worth of draft picks. Now, in granted, they're not all first. They don't, I don't think they have 3 first round picks, but they have a lot of picks.
Regardless. That's like 3.5 years worth of draft picks in 2 years. And they have 7 seconds over the next 2 years. and 6/4.
Okay, 7 seconds is ridiculous. Like, Arizona has 5 over the next 2, and I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, and even Anaheim, they have Anaheim have 6 or 8 over the next 3 years, which is still a lot. Oh man, the teams that are have sold this trade deadline sold.
Yeah. Yeah. What else do we have? We talked about the Hagel. We talked about Giordano. Yeah.
Quick thing. I pulled up Arizona as well. I don't know if anything changed. No, it definitely changed the last time we talked about them. They have
probably
3 firsts and 4 seconds this year. Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you want to get into Sorry.
I want to get anyways, that's okay. I forgot what I was gonna say. I want to get into Hampus Lindholm.
Yes. Yeah,
this is a haul. This was an absolute haul. So again, back to that seller's market we were talking about. Anaheim sent over Hampus Lindholm, who signed an extension, by the way. I think it was like, do you have the terms in front of you? I know it was six and a half. I think it was 8 years.
I'll pull it up.
I think it was 8 years, 6.5. So at the time that he was traded over, he was a pending free agent. So it was Hampus Lindholm and someone named Cody Curran. I don't know who that is. I think it's just a contract equalizer. In exchange for a first round pick. This is Boston gave a first round pick, a first round pick in 2022, a second round pick in 2023, a 2024 second round pick, John Moore, who I think is basically just being buried right now. And we can get to John Moore in a second. And Juho Vaakanainen, who I think is a prospect. Old Bruins prospect who has not panned out as much as they wanted him to. And this is someone who actually really wanted the Leafs to go after because he's a good puck moving defenseman. And I actually really like Hampus Lindholm. And then I saw his player charge because they're not very good for 6.5.
Hold on. John Moore is actually, he's 31 years old. He's on the Vegas Golden Knights now.
Hold on. Hold that thought. We'll get into that in a second. Hold on to that for now. Okay. Because that's a bigger point. And I'm people who, in hindsight, people are going to know where I'm going with this because main thing here is, though, the Bruins give up a lot for a very big name defenseman who his advanced stats charts, or at least if you look at the Jay Fresh Hockey player cards, he's not very good at all. He has, I think, one of the low-key worst penalty differentials in the league, he takes a lot of penalties. I don't think he's that great defensively. He's a pretty good offensive defenseman, but I think the exact quote that I saw was if the Bruins sign him for anything over 4.5 annually, it's a massive overpay and they give him 6.5. So
the re-signing is $6.5 million for 8 seasons.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Hampus Lindholm is currently, do you know how old he is? Guess.
Hold on. 25.
28.
Oh.
So yeah, he's going to be 36 when this contract ends, and the Bruins have to figure out a way to manage his $6.5 million contract. Oh my God, that's too much.
Yeah. So again, good haul for Anaheim. Bruins got a defenseman. We'll see how good he is. I still like Hampus Lindholm. I like it. 8.5 is pretty bad, though. Straight up, that's pretty awful.
6.5 for 8.
Yeah. Did you have any other thoughts on the Hampus Lindholm deal? Or
so my biggest thought was, I was so confident that only one of Manston or Hampus Lindholm would be traded. I read somewhere that the Ducks wanted to keep one of them at least post this trade deadline, and maybe they would figure out what to do with the other one in the offseason. And I thought it would come down to Hampus Lindholm maybe re-signed by the Ducks in the offseason or traded in the offseason, because they already traded Josh Manson a few days ago. But then they traded him as well. And so now I'm like, do the Ducks even have anyone? They have a ton of prospects coming up, but what did their defense core look like? I don't know. But to be honest, I'm not going to look at them right now because that's not the focus of this. The Bruins, again, this is like Tampa. So much. for someone who is not going to make that much of an impact on your roster. Like, where is Hampus Lindholm going to play?
Yeah, you got, that's a good point.
Their defense pairings right now are Mike Riley, Charlie McAvoy, Matt Grzelcyk, Brandon Carlo, and then Derek Forbort, Connor Clifton.
Okay, I think he probably goes on the second pair. And then they probably move Grzelcyk down to third. But yeah, I have no idea. That's a good question. I don't know. We don't know yet. Yeah, that's a good point. It is a really good point. The Bruins are playing really well, though. So I'll be curious to see what happens with that. They've been getting really good goaltending all year from Jeremy Swayman and Linus Hallmark to a lesser extent. But Jeremy Swayman, someone that no one's really talking about, is being a potential like Calder finalist, because like he's like a 925 and like a goals against of just above two. He's been unreal. So again, we'll see what happens. I think Hampus Lindholm probably cracks that top four, though, either on the left or the right side. I think he can play both. I'm not 100% sure about that, but yeah, it is a lot. They gave up a lot, and they're giving up a lot of cap space to get him over to the Anaheim Ducks.
Boston Bruins.
Yes, Boston Bruins. God damn it. Okay, yeah.
Hampus Lindholm, his career high is 31 points in 69 games. Sorry, 34 points in 78 with Anaheim about seven seasons ago.
Yeah, he's never really been an offensive defenseman. He's been more of a hybrid, like two-way. So, so you're not really getting, you're not really looking for him to contribute a whole lot offensively. I think it's more so trying to contribute defensively, which apparently he's not even good at either. So, Yes.
There's two stark differences to how the Giordano trade and the Hampus Lindholm trade turned out. Because I think both will play on the top four in their respective teams. Mm-hmm. But I think Toronto, this is my prediction, they were never in on Mark Giordano. I don't think they were, Giordano was their first or even second, like, preferred player to acquire this trade deadline.
Interesting. Okay.
I think the acquisition cost for Giordano was so low because Giordano wanted the Leafs more than the Leafs wanted him. Versus the Boston Bruins situation, I think it's flipped. I think the Bruins wanted Lindholm way more than Lindholm, or Lindholm wanted the Bruins.
Well, I think, especially with Lindholm, I think Lindholm was basically one of the last actually good defensemen left on the board at the deadline. Just quickly taking a look now. Yeah, it was either really him or Mark Giordano. And Mark Giordano at that point had said he wanted to go to Toronto. So keep that in mind as well. I mean, I don't know if it's an interesting theory. I don't know if I buy that, just given that, like, if there's one thing you know about this front office, I don't think they would really give up assets unless it was for someone who they actually actively really wanted. But anyways, I don't know. Maybe you're right. It's a very interesting theory. And I think there's maybe some truth to that. But I think the other thing we have to remember is, because Mark Giordano had a no trade clause, he could decide where he wanted to go. So it's not he literally could have been like, okay, Ron Francis, I'm going to sit here unless you trade me to Toronto, and you're going to risk losing me for nothing.
Yep.
And it worked. So anyways,
the Leafs got so fucking lucky. Look at all these defensemen that got traded and the hauls that some teams had to give up for them. Wait, hold on. Quick thing. How long do you think this will take? The John Moore explanation?
Not very long. Very long. Because I was going to say we can probably do this and just save the Claude Giroux one for the next episode.
Yep.
Or next ride, rather. So the reason I wanted to bring up John Moore, because he's currently involved in one of the most interesting trade deadline moves I've ever seen, ever. Like, super fascinating. So for those of you who don't know right now, as of right now, there's an investigation or something going on with the Anaheim Ducks and the Vegas Golden Knights. And basically, to long story short, I think the Vegas Golden Knights are trying to send Evgeny Dadonov over to the Anaheim Ducks to basically get rid of his contract, because they don't like players who make money in Vegas unless they're getting the new player, supposedly. Anyways, so Evgeny Dadonov was going to be traded to Vegas, for Ryan Kesler's contract. They were going to basically put him on LTIR, use cap circumvention, whatever, get the cap space, get close to the cap as you possibly can. And then they acquire John Moore, who they basically buried. And the reason why there's a whole thing right now going on is because the Vegas Golden Knights were not aware that Evgeny Dadonov has a 10-team no-trade list, where before he gets traded, he can submit 10 he has 10 teams that he cannot be traded to. And the Anaheim Ducks are on that list.
So right now,
the NHL and the NHLPA are trying to figure out what the hell happened. I think it basically sounds like there was, like, the Golden Knights just didn't know. And from everything I've read, it sounds like the trade's going to be next. Dadonov's going to be sent back to the Vegas Golden Knights. Ryan Kesler and John Moore are going to be sent back to Anaheim. And the reason I think this is interesting is because the Vegas Golden Knights obviously currently have a lot of players on IR and LTIR with, like, Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone, or whatever. So if they can't get rid of Evgeny Dadonov and they can't clear that cap space, I don't know what they're going to do to be able to get some of those players off of LTIR. It's going to be really interesting. But yeah, I'm fascinated to see it. I guess once the playoffs start, you don't really need, you can go over the salary cap, but the Vegas Golden Knights right now are at a point where, like, I don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs. They've fallen like a rock.
Let me quickly pull up the standings. Yeah. The Vegas Golden Knights are in the second wildcard position in the West. They are only 1 point ahead of Dallas with 4 games played more than Dallas.
Oof. Yeah. So, like, again, we briefly talked about this before. Like, neither of us had ever seen anything like this ever. And it's fascinating that the Knights didn't even know that the that Dadonov didn't have a 10-team no trade list. But I think we were both saying, like, I think it's, I don't have any sympathy for the Golden Knights, the team. I have sympathy for Evgeny Dadonov. I hope he, because that's going to be a real shit situation to be in after, if this thing gets nixed. But maybe if you're Vegas, don't trade players you just acquired a year ago.
I think if I had to give any word of advice to Vegas, maybe respect players a little more.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if anything, This puts the nail in the coffin for the take about the Vegas Golden Knights front office does not care about the emotions, about the respect it gives to its players. It's just in and out every single year. You are never guaranteed a spot on the roster. Yep. Like, look at Marc-Andre Fleury. Look at the situation with Petrangelo. Yeah. Petrangelo. And now Dadonov.
Mm-hmm. Dadonov, yep. And the fact that's happened with Fleury, someone that a lot of people consider to be one of the nicest people in the league and one of the most well-liked and most well-respected players in the league, just says so much about the Golden Knights. The Golden Knights organization, like the front office, not the players, because again, the players who are currently on their roster are the players, and not, like, I don't know. At the end of the day, I think Vegas is always going to remain a very attractive place to play. No state income tax, great weather. The team had been doing very well. But again, something we need to keep in mind is, like, I think they're, and we said this at the beginning of the season, then goes on our second ride. I think their window is, that was before they got Jack Eichel. So they have Jack Eichel, great. They're going to be great. But man, I look at a lot of contracts on this team and see some of the players on this team, and oh boy, like they're in for some stuff, man. Like,
I was just going to mention the Cody Kiran, you mentioned, you don't really know too much about him. 32 years old, making $1 million. So he looks like he was just traded to the Boston Bruins as part of the Hampus Lindholm trade, just as a
film. Yeah. No, probably, because I think the Bruins sent over 2 contracts to 3 contracts. The Bruins sent over 3. So I think the Ducks had to send 2 or something just to make the contracts work out. Yeah, and just for context, the Vegas Golden Knights currently 8 players on IR and 3 on long-term injured reserve.
Holy fuck.
Mark Stone, Alec Martinez are both on LTIR. And then on injured reserve, they currently have Max Pacioretty, Ryan Kesler, Robin Lehner, Riley Smith, and Braden McNabb. Now, granted, Ryan Kesler could go back to the Anaheim Ducks, and so could John Moore, who's currently buried. So they have a $1.625 million cap charge against that. But as of right now, they currently have, as of right now, they have $3.5 million in cap space, but that could very well just quickly disappear. And then they'll be back in negative because they're going to be, they have to pay Dadonov. So anyways, we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, so that's why I thought, because I didn't even know John Moore was a Anaheim Duck. I thought he signed there in the, like, I didn't even know he's part of the Hampus Lindholm trade. It was very, which is very fascinating. So yeah.
You want to put a pin in this episode? We'll cover the rest of the big trades in the next part of the stuff.
Yeah, that's probably a good call. Yeah. So again, you'll hear from us shortly. I don't know what the gap's going to be in terms of the upload thing, upload time between the two. Hopefully, but you should be hearing from us shortly, very shortly, as in like 2 seconds as soon as this episode's over. Follow socials, follow streaming platforms, everything. Check it out. Check out our YouTube channel. Check out our TikTok, Instagram, everything. All right. Peace.
Bye.